Today on Maine Calling, repercussions of the fatal ice shooting in Biddeford. It's been 3 weeks since an ICE agent shot and killed a young man in Biddeford. Johan Sebastian Duran Guerrero was not the target of the enforcement action and was here in Maine legally. The Department of Homeland Security is investigating the incident. Where does the investigation stand? And what has been the impact on the community of Biddeford and immigrants throughout the state? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will talk with local community leaders and immigrant groups about how the event changed the community. Also, a new law limiting local cooperation with ICE is now in effect. What will be the impact of that law? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine. Now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It has been 3 weeks since an ICE agent shot and killed Johan Sebastian Duran Guerrero in Biddeford. Today, we discuss how the community is coping with the aftermath of the killing and the national attention. And we'll discuss the impact of a new law limiting ICE cooperation in Maine. Joining me for the hour is my colleague, Ari Snyder. He is one of Maine Public's All Things Considered hosts and a reporter who covers immigration issues. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you live in Biddeford? Are you an immigrant living here in Maine? Has the fatal shooting of Duran Guerrero affected you, your community, your workplace? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Ari, thank you so much for joining us and for all your reporting on this. Let's start with the investigation into what happened on July 23rd in Biddeford. What do we know about the status of that investigation?
Yeah, thanks, Jen. So it's a little bit of hurry up and wait at this point. I reached out to the Attorney General, the state Attorney General, that is, last week to ask about this. And their office responded saying that they can't share any information right now and they will do so when it's appropriate. But I have been in touch with the family's lawyer. That's the lawyer representing Duran Guerrero's partner and family. And the lawyer, Ben Gideon, said that the family has been contacted by state investigators and is cooperating. So there seems to be something happening. You know, the Attorney General said that he would investigate this, so that's no surprise. But we don't know exactly where it stands right now.
All right. And another angle on this is that there have been protests at the ICE facility in Scarborough. Now I understand the Scarborough Town Council has weighed in. What have they done?
Yeah. So last week, the Scarborough Town Council passed a proclamation asking the federal delegation, that is, you know, Maine's congressional representatives, to consider relocating or closing the Scarborough field office, ICE's field office there. You know, this is a non-binding, you know, proclamation issued by a town council. This does not have a ton of teeth behind it. And that was acknowledged, you know, by the town councilors. I said that this doesn't have teeth, but we do want to send a message and we want to engage with the congressional delegation on this. And I was at that meeting last week where they passed this proclamation, and the message I heard pretty loud and clear from just about everyone who testified. There were certainly a variance in opinions, but most people were saying they wanted the town to send a message and they wanted the town to actually do a lot more, right? So some people got up and spoke and said, we want the town to look into zoning laws. We want the town, you know, to pursue Freedom of Information Act requests to get more information about ICE's operations at their field office in Scarborough. So my understanding is that we might see quite a bit more attention from residents and local elected officials on the office in Scarborough and trying to figure out more about what's going on there and then trying to pressure the federal government to move the office. Whether or not that's successful, of course, remains to be seen.
All right, Ari, it's been 3 weeks, and in that time, the community of Biddeford has been grappling with this shooting that happened on city streets. A whole lot of national press has been here in Maine. Maine has been discussed on the national news. Social media has just been ablaze with comments from all parts of the political spectrum. And I'm just wondering, you're in touch with the immigrant communities here in Maine. How has all of this affected immigrants who are here in Maine legally?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I can't speak for everyone, right? And the immigrant communities in Maine are not monolithic, and people are you know, experiencing this in all different ways. But I mean, I think it's no surprise to say that it's caused a lot of fear, right? And this is coming off of a year and a half where there was already a lot of fear building over ICE arrests and ICE detentions that had already been increasing in the state. Of course, we saw in January the big immigration enforcement surge where 200 people were arrested in about a week. That caused, you know, so much fear, a lot of people staying home from work, keeping their kids home from school. And then there was this sort of like slow reemergence to some degree out of that into the spring. Immigration enforcement seemed to be increasing again in the spring. And so people were already on edge. And then this has really, you know, caused so much fear. Just sort of on top of everything that had been happening for communities living here who've come from other parts of the world. I think this has been a really tough reality to grapple with.
What was I going to say? You mentioned the January surge and some of what was happening then. And you mentioned that people are keeping their children out of school. Obviously, it's summer, so we don't have school in many places and most places. But what about workplaces? Are you seeing and hearing again that people are not going to work because of the fear?
I haven't been hearing as much of that. It doesn't mean it's not happening. I have a less clear sense now of what the exact impact is.
Okay. Well, on the line with us now is Molly Curran-Rolls, who is the Executive Director of ACLU Maine. Molly, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, one thing that's happened just recently is that these new laws passed by the Maine legislature in the last session that are known kind of as the ICE outlaws are now in effect. I know that most law enforcement agencies said that they were not going to wait for them to go into effect to honor them, but I'm wondering what impact you're seeing since they went into effect at the beginning of, was last month, correct?
Yeah, just a couple days. And these laws are an effort to limit the role that Maine state resources of many kinds play in immigration enforcement and clarifying the kind of basic safety that we want all community members to have when they're out living their normal lives. And in some ways to address some of what Ari was talking about in terms of the fear that people have had and the limits on their normal lives during this period of time.
So what do the laws do exactly?
There are three laws. We're calling them the ICE outlaws, as you mentioned, ICE out of policing, ICE out of our homes, and ICE out of schools and state health care. And they make sure that Maine police and public safety resources won't be part of enforcing immigration laws. They make sure that landlords won't be able to target immigrant renters by sharing their personal data, and that schools and healthcare facilities overseen by the state will take measures to restrict ICE access to private information and spaces without a valid judicial warrant.
Do you believe that we will see a difference in the way that ICE operates? I know you said these have been in effect for just a couple days. But as I mentioned, most police law enforcement agencies in Maine said that they would abide by them before that. Have we seen a difference?
Yeah, the ACLU of Maine obtained hundreds of public records showing cooperation last year throughout the state between local police and ICE. And that was really, it ended up meaning that there were many, many folks who were targeted and who were engaging with ICE because they had some interaction with Maine law enforcement. We have a number of really specific incidences. A lot of them had to do with roadside stops, with folks who were in accidents or who broke down on the side of the road. And then when a local police officer would respond, ICE or CBP were called. That activity will stop under these new laws, and that's an important thing for people who are just trying to get to work, for example. It won't stop the ability of ICE to operate in Maine, however.
Okay. ACLU Maine, of course, is part of a much larger national organization. And there's a new report out looking at the enforcement interactions between ICE agents and the way that the decisions are made on the ground and how that's been influenced by the decision making within the higher management of Department of Homeland Security. Tell us what you found.
Yeah, I think the most important thing to understand about what we saw in Biddeford and what we saw in January during what they called the Operation Catch of the Day is that these are not isolated incidents. As the ACLU's recent report shows, there's really widespread violations and misconduct across the country, including excessive force, the actions that are taking place near sensitive locations, racial profiling, and detention and targeting of U.S. citizens particularly as well. What I think, you know, many of us remember is growing up hearing a lot of positive statements from people like Ronald Reagan or George Bush Sr. There really was bipartisan consensus about the impact of immigrants in our communities, the dignity of their work, the way that they were engaged in family life and the value that they brought to our communities. And as recently as 2004, DHS had a policy prohibiting immigration arrests at sensitive locations like schools and healthcare facilities and libraries. But over the last year and a half, we've seen this radical shift where the administration has moved forward with incredibly harsh and cruel measures. And as Ari mentioned, they're really terrifying our communities. ICE is a pretty new agency. It was created after 9/11, and it is a part of the Department of Homeland Security. And what we've been able to identify are real issues with vetting, with training. And so it's really important to understand how this is kind of baked into the structure of the way that ICE is now operating across the country.
All right. I understand ACLU of Maine filed a new lawsuit last week. Tell us about that.
We did. We're a part of 50 lawsuits. We had five different suits that we're working on. They're all under the Federal Tort Claims Act. And we are holding officers accountable across the country for the violations of law that took place during immigration enforcement actions. As I mentioned, we've seen a wide variety of violations of individual rights of, in some cases, folks who are U.S. citizens, in other cases, folks who are lawfully present. You can read some more details about the cases that took place in Maine on our website at aclumaine.org. But these are all instances where we really can't call what's happening law enforcement. These are violations of the law that are occurring.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for calling in. Molly Current Rolls is the executive director of ACLU Maine. I appreciate it. Ari, I want to follow up on talking about the ICE outlaws. I'm wondering if you on the street are hearing things. Are you sensing a shift in the way that ICE is operating in Maine? Are you hearing from people who have had interactions with ICE agents or who are tracking what they're doing?
Well, I'd say the most direct information comes from the Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project. I understand that we may have someone calling in from ILAP shortly. They'll be able to go into more detail. But just last week when these new laws came out aimed at limiting cooperation between state and local agencies and ICE, ILAP mentioned that they'd been seeing this trend where there was actually, like over the last few months, fewer and fewer Border Patrol arrests and more ICE arrest. And that may seem like a subtle shift, but prior to that, and you know, for much of last year, and even into early this year, we were seeing Border Patrol involved in a lot of those calls that Molly mentioned, where there was a traffic incident or another sort of local law enforcement involved incident, and Border Patrol would be called by the local police or the state police, and someone would end up in custody. So again, ILAP can speak probably to this in more depth, but in my experience, a lot of those calls, a lot of the instances where people were ending up being transferred from local law enforcement to federal law enforcement, that was often happening with Border Patrol getting involved. And that seems to have diminished. I mean, even just in Border Patrol's own statistics that they publish, last year they were hitting record highs in terms of the number of monthly arrests in Maine. At one point in April of last year, it was over 100 in 1 month in April. And most recently, it's dropped down into like the single digits in terms of Border Patrol arrests in Maine. So it certainly seems like that is diminishing. Whether or not that's a direct result of these laws, I think it remains hard to tease out a precise answer, but it does seem like the landscape is changing slightly.
On the line with us now is Maine House of Representatives Speaker of the House, Ryan Fecteau. Speaker Fecteau, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
I understand that you and other legislative leaders in Maine sent a letter to DHS Secretary Markway Mullen on July 29th, so just recently. Tell us what was in the letter and if you received a response.
I have not received a response back at this point. The letter was really focused on making sure that the investigation into what happened here in my hometown, in the district that I represent, that it is independent, that the information that investigators need, particularly those here in our state who are conducting the investigation, have access to all the information in order to make determination as to the facts of what played out that morning and why lethal force was used against a resident of our community, and most importantly, someone who was not the target of the operation that was being conducted that morning.
You said you haven't heard back from the letter, but you mentioned, Speaker Fecteau, that Biddeford is your community, and I'm wondering, as a resident and as a somebody who represents residents, what are you hearing? What is the overwhelming message or feeling that you're getting from the people that you represent?
Well, I think people have a deep sense of grief that someone could wake up in the morning, get on their way to work, wish their loved ones a good day, their wife, their three-year-old child, and just moments later end up dead in our street. And I think that sense of grief has lingered, especially as the memorial to Mr. Guerrero continues to be growing at the corner of where he perished. In fact, folks have actually been replacing the flowers that have been laid there, and it's quite a sight. I think grief is the first feeling, and then I think folks are wondering when we're going to have answers. When will there be a sense of justice? Can there be a sense of justice when someone's life is taken? And I think that's another really another feeling that's lingering for folks, is they want answers. They want to know that there will be accountability for these kinds of actions when someone is faced with a capital a capital offense, essentially, without having ever been charged or was not the target of this operation.
Speaker Fecteau, you sent that letter a week ago. I'm wondering if you're thinking about what else you, in your position as Speaker of the House, might do, and what you're thinking about, what your next move may be.
Well, I think we're now really looking to the federal government and to Congress. I think there has been a complete blank check given to ICE to conduct its operations without accountability. And I think the question remains, will the White House and will the folks who represent the people and the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives finally take the necessary action to rein in this agency that has too many stories to account for at this point of conducting their operations way outside the normal standards of a law enforcement agency. And I think that's a big concern for not just those of us here in Maine, but across the country. We've heard of these incidences occurring elsewhere. We've also heard of what's happening in detention facilities and people who've been detained and not given access to legal representation for many days, sometimes months, people who've not ever been who've never been issued a court order for their detention, but are being detained anyway. There's numerous problems here, and the question is, will Congress continue to write $70 billion and increase to ICE budgets, or will they actually demand accountability? That's what I want to see.
I'm going to turn to my colleague, Ari Snyder, who has a question for you, Speaker Fecteau.
Yeah, Speaker, thanks for joining us. I'm curious, do you have any insight into where the state investigation stands right now into the shooting, or where, you know, where that might be headed, what they're looking into, if they're getting cooperation from the feds? Like, just curious if you have heard anything up in Augusta about that.
Yeah, I think the investigation is continuing in the Attorney General's office, and I hope that we'll get an update on where things stand, and hopefully some further details at some point in the near future. I also understand that these investigations do take time. I can imagine a great deal of information to sort through from witness testimony to the actual direct evidence that was, you know, there. I think all those things require the sensitivity and due diligence that is deserved when you have an incident like this. And so, remain confident in the Attorney General's office to conduct this investigation and do so independently. And that's my understanding that so far has been the case.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Speaker. Ryan Fecteau is House Speaker of the House of Representatives in Maine. We want to note that we did reach out to the Department of Homeland Security to participate in today's program and have not heard back. We're going to take a quick break. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're discussing a new law designed to constrain ICE actions in Maine and also how the community is doing in the aftermath of the killing of Yoan Sebastian Duran Guerrero. My guest for the hour, Ari Snyder. He's one of Maine Public's All Things Considered hosts and a reporter who covers immigration issues. Join the conversation. Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Calling us now is Sue Roche with the Immigrant Legal Advocacy Program. Thank you so much for calling in, Sue.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
I know it's only a couple days, but I'm wondering if you have noticed any change in ICE activity since the implementation of these new laws?
So we, I think in the last couple of days, not necessarily, but we have seen in the last few months some changes previously we were seeing more arrests since the January operation, more arrests in rural areas of the state where local law enforcement was turning people over to Border Patrol. But in recent months, we've been seeing more ICE direct targets of individuals, primarily those with who are here with legal visas, who enter the country on legal visas and who are in the lawful process of applying for legal status and have work authorization. But we have seen fewer, and I think we haven't seen any recent local and state law enforcement turning people over to ICE. So we do think that just the, knowing that the law is coming into effect has had an impact, but I haven't seen a significant change in the last week or last couple of
weeks. Interesting. And just to make, I just want to make sure I'm understanding what you're saying correctly. Are you saying we're seeing more targeting of people who entered the country on a visa and fewer people who are asylum seekers being targeted?
No, so people who entered on a visa and who now are in the process of applying for asylum or some other type of legal status, so they've submitted their application to immigration and are just waiting for the adjudication backlogs, and they are authorized to work. They have work permits that they're granted while their cases are pending.
So you're seeing those people targeted?
Yes.
Hmm. Are there certain areas in Maine where there is more or less ICE activity, certain communities or, you know, Maine cities, Biddeford, mm-hmm. Lewiston, Waterville, or rural areas? We heard about a surge in a couple months ago in, you know, areas around farms.
Yeah, so we have, I mean, just sort of going back since early 2025, we've seen, you know, a significant increase in ICE enforcement and throughout the state. Since the January operation, we saw primarily arrests in the rural areas of the state for a few months that were more Border Patrol. Many were with local and state law enforcement turning people over in situations where it appeared to be racial profiling. We saw situations with people who having their fog light on when there was no fog, snow on their car, uncentered license plate, loud exhaust, and things like that, and people being turned over. But we then, so that was for a few months after the January operation, we were seeing more of those types of arrests. And then in more recent months, we've been seeing people who are targeted in more southern areas of the state. We've seen a lot in Lewiston, Auburn area, also Portland, Scarborough, other areas of southern Maine, and Augusta. Yeah, mostly ICE targeting people directly or those around them.
And let me ask you about body cameras. Are you seeing the more common usage of body cameras on ICE agents or not really?
I am not actually sure. We don't really have that information related to whether there have been body cameras other than what we've been hearing in the news.
Okay. I'm going to turn to my colleague, Ari Snyder, who I know you know. Ari, what would you like to ask Sue?
Sue, you may have already answered this question, so forgive me if it's a little redundant, but I'm just so curious about this drop in Border Patrol arrests that I've seen just in CBP's own data. Do you get a sense that that's because they're getting fewer calls from local law enforcement for immigration stuff?
Yeah, well, we don't know the exact reason, but we've certainly seen those two sort of correlate with each other. Certainly that could be one of the reasons, but we don't know the reason behind it.
Sue, thank you so much for calling in. Sue Roche is director of the Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project. So we're going to turn now to Marty Grohman, who's calling in. Marty was longtime mayor of Biddeford, a longtime resident of Biddeford, and a former state rep. Marty, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, good morning, Jennifer. Thank you.
Have you seen the community change in the 3 weeks since the killing?
Yeah, I mean, it was 3 weeks ago yesterday, and I think, you know, there's no going back to July 12th. It changed Biddeford. I think it changed Maine. You'll kind of feel like we believe this kind of thing doesn't happen here, but it did. It hurts. I was at the memorial at Pullen Hill just an hour ago, and the notes that people have left are incredibly moving. You can feel that it's a city that's grieving, but I also don't want people listening across Maine to think that this tragedy is all that Biddeford is. We're a beautiful, vibrant, soulful city, a hardworking place, start early, stay late place, and city theater, University of New England, beaches, and we're still the comeback city. We reinvented ourselves while keeping its heart, so I want to keep that front and center.
I'm going to read you an email that has come in, and this is, I know that you're not mayor now, but I'm just wondering if you're hearing similar things. This is from Kelsey. Kelsey writes, I live, own a business, and I'm a community organizer in Biddeford. Our city is playing middle ground politics instead of helping us grieve. Our city and community needs support. We need help living with this grief, and the city can't even release plans for a permanent memorial. Instead, they're wasting city resources on making the fire department wash chalk off brick walls. And she is starting a civic engagement group, and she says you can find it on Instagram at Biddeford Bulletin Board. And Marty, I'm wondering what it is that city leaders even can do in a situation like that, and are you hearing a lot of the same kind of thing that Kelsey is saying, is that we as a community, as our local government, needs to be doing more?
I mean, I think people are angry. I think people have a right to be angry. This whole thing is incredibly upsetting. I think the city and Mayor LaFountain have done a nice job of convening a council meeting, especially for people to be able to express their hurt and their feelings. And you know what I want to emphasize is that, you know, let's get together in person. I mean, tonight actually, coincidentally, is National Night Out, which is a event with a touch of truck and you know, check out a police cruiser type of thing down in Mechanics Park, which is where sort of demonstrations had previously been coming together. And it's a beautiful evening. The wall where people have been writing in chalk is there, you know, and people are expressing themselves. But I just came from there, and it's a clean and beautiful area downtown. So my thought is, let's just get together in person. And I feel this way as former mayor, I have to say, Jennifer, that the city needs a hug. And I think that's what Kelsey suggesting, you know, and I do feel that way, that it's trying to tear us apart, all of this. And wherever you stand on it, I hope that we don't let that happen. I hope that we, because we are a community, and that's what I want people to feel.
Well, thank you for calling in, Marty Grohman, former mayor and longtime resident of Biddeford. We're going to go to Maggie calling from York Beach. Hi, Maggie. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks, Jennifer, for taking my call. My question is, with the administration's quotas, you have to take so many people every day or every month. They seem to be going after anybody just to fill the quotas. And also hiring ICE agents who are not well-trained, and maybe that's their job, just go after anybody to fill the quota. And I don't hear this conversation at all.
Yeah, well, Ari, let me ask you those questions. The first one, what do we know about the quota that we're hearing about and the hiring practices of DHS?
Yeah, so I believe the quotas were reported in, it was maybe May or June. And to be clear, I don't think that was ever, you know, officially confirmed. It was reporting, I think, by the New York Times or another national outlet that has better sources, you know, within the Trump administration, that it was, I believe, his advisor, Stephen Miller, who wanted ICE to arrest, you know, a certain number of people every month. And we did see that that did correspond with a jump in ICE arrests around that time that those comments about quotas were reported. It's unclear if they are still operating on that basis. But I think as folks like Sue Roche with the Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project, excuse me, will say, is they are seeing, you know, and have consistently been seeing people getting arrested in Maine who do not have criminal records and are following legal immigration pathways, whether that be asylum or something else. And then, of course, the second part of the question, vetting of ICE agents. I mean, that's come under a lot of scrutiny, and people were warning about this as Congress passed, you know, big new chunks of spending for ICE and Border Patrol in the One Beautiful Bill Act and in other funding, other federal funding sources, that this push to hire more agents could lead to, you know, a rushing of that process. And you even had Tom Homan, who is, you know, known as Trump's quote unquote border czar, out there recently addressing reporting about the ICE agent who is allegedly the one who shot Duran Guerrero. And Tom Homan was saying that, hey, you know, some of the things that have been reported about him are things that should have come up in vetting. So it's unclear, you know, what we'll learn more from the administration if DHS is investigating its own vetting processes. You know, that kind of remains to be seen. But those are certainly things that have come under great scrutiny.
We are going to take another quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation, you have time. You can call 1-800-399-3566. Send a short email to talk@mainpublic.org or find us on social media. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, we're getting an update on the Biddeford community. And what may be happening with the new laws in Maine, the ICE Out laws. My guest is Ari Snyder. He's one of Maine Public's All Things Considered hosts, and he's also a reporter who covers immigration issues. If you'd like to share your comments and questions, you can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We have an email from John. It says, our kids are in or recently graduated from college, and three of the four were adopted from China when they were young. In the adoption process, they became U.S. citizens as soon as they set foot on U.S. soil on the flight from China. However, our anxiety over their status and treatment has been high through both the through both Trump administrations, but particularly this one. The surge and shooting in Biddeford have only added to this anxiety. All our kids are huge assets to our town and their schools and their jobs and sports and other activities. They are all very different, but all of them enrich lives around them, including their parents. We've been able to give them opportunities they wouldn't have had in China, but our lives have been vastly fuller by having them in our family than any small amount we've given them. I can only think that many other immigrants in Maine are the same way, and the federal government making many of them into boogeymen is cruel, shortchanges our communities, shoots ourselves in the foot, and is wrong. So we're hearing from John. This is a family that is not, Ari, an immigrant family as we think of immigrant families, but the fear for their children who are adopted from another country.
Yeah, and that's certainly something that I've been hearing as I've been at these public meetings and these protests and elsewhere, is that the fear is not just, is not only for folks who immigrated here from other countries. It's not even, you know, just for people who are immigrants, but it's people whose family members are from somewhere else or whose family members are people of color. And there's a fear that just the speed and aggression with which ICE has been moving in the state can lead to incidents like this one in Biddeford, whereas, of course, we learned Duran Guerrero was not even the person they were looking for that day. And so that's certainly something that I've heard being out at different events. Just there's so much fear that anyone who might not look white could potentially be a target.
We'll go to Jonathan calling from Biddeford. Hi, Jonathan. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for having me on. My question was that I've heard a lot of reporting that the agents did not have any kind of body cameras during the incident where Sebastian died. And however, I've seen pictures that seem to indicate to me that at least one of them did have a body camera on them. And I'm trying to figure out if anybody else is kind of seeing that or if that's being talked about on the news elsewhere.
Yeah, thanks for that question, Jonathan. And Ari, I think Jonathan's question comes from the reality that people did get, not complete, but did get pictures and footage of parts of what happened. And he's saying it looks like in one of those pictures that an agent did have a body camera on. What do we know about the use of body cameras that day?
Yeah, I think we're still trying to untangle that. There was sort of different reports that came out about whether there were body cams that weren't on or if there weren't body cameras at all. But it seems that at the very least there was no body camera recording. I don't want to, you know, get ahead of myself on that because there are investigations looking into this. But, you know, in other incidents where body camera footage has come out, you know, fairly swiftly afterward, that does not seem to be the case here.
All right, Jonathan, good question. Thank you. Let's see here. We'll go to James calling from Biddeford. James, go ahead.
Yes, hello, thank you. I was driving down to the library in Biddeford when I heard the news of the tragic shooting and went to the library. Then I heard about the gathering, the memorial gathering or protest or demonstration at Mechanics Park, and so I went down to that. And one of the things that happened that I haven't heard people talking about is that there were people moving through the crowd with this special cameras, like big cell phones that had multiple lenses and pointing them. And I assume they were like, facial recognition cameras. And then they had a event where they walked around the block and I participated in that. And there was a person standing in tactical gear, you know, with a vest and all dark, but no identification. And he was scanning, looked like the faces of everyone walking by. I know we had a program about the concerns about scanning license plates on cars, but this is a real concern. I don't know if it was intended to be a chilling thing for protesters. I thought about taking my cell phone out and taking a picture of this person that was scanning. I thought that'd be too provocative, but I'm wondering, you know, why they're doing this, where the information is going, and who's overseeing that, and then do people have the right to privacy if they're in a dumpster? I've heard about these kinds of things happening in more autocratic totalitarian, where they would track people's movements during COVID.
Thank you so much for telling us your experience. And just to be clear, your concern is that some sort of federal agent has been filming people at protests and maybe using facial recognition software to keep some sort of database of people who are there?
Yes. It's to keep some sort of data, and the people were there, but where it goes and what it would be used for, or whether it's trying to recognize other people who might be their status is questionable, you know, against some kind of database that they are. I don't know, but it's, you know, it was a person in official gear without any identification. It seems like there's a real privacy issue there.
Yeah, James, I can answer part of it. I know that if you're in a public place, there is no right to privacy for having your picture taken in a public place. But Ari, do we know, have you heard other people, let me just ask you this, who have the same experience of James, feel as though at a protest they were being filmed by someone who was an agent or something like that? And also, what do we know, if we know anything, about how that is being used?
Yeah, so I haven't heard anything specifically about that. I do understand from other protests that I've been to that there's a lot of filming and everyone's kind of filming in both directions. And you will sometimes have counter protesters filming all the protesters and then the protesters filming the counter protesters. I can't speak to this particular situation, but I think where you see this become, where we have a little more documentation and where this does relate to ICE and has led to now several lawsuits out of Maine, is where people who were filming ICE agents are now suing ICE after agents threatened to arrest them for filming them. There was a comment that an ICE agent made to an observer in Maine during the ICE surge in January when an observer was filming ICE. The ICE agent took a picture of their license plate, I believe, and said, you know, made some comment about that person now ending up in a little database. DHS has then denied the existence of that database in court records. But this question of who is filming who and where that information goes, I think, is very live, especially when it's not always clear who is doing the filming and who they are.
All right, James, thank you for your call. Michael on Facebook has several questions. I'll read them. How can Mainers identify ICE agents at a traffic stop? Has DHS explained what Johan Guerrero did to become a threat to the public, causing him to be executed? Could Maine Attorney General even press charges, or would the Supremacy Clause put federal agents who may commit crimes out of reach? So let's take them one at a time, Ari. Do you know how an ICE agent can be identified, whether it's a traffic stop or somewhere else? They have, it's supposed to say ICE right there on their clothing, correct?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what the regulations are internally for their own uniforms. I mean, sometimes they're wearing tactical gear that says ICE. Sometimes they've got a badge that says ICE, but not always. I mean, looking through different videos, it's not always clear. Sometimes, obviously, you know, it's Border Patrol agents, so it's a different, you know, different agency entirely, obviously housed under the same, you know, DHS. But it's not always easy to identify. And also the unmarked cars obviously makes that more difficult.
And his second question, has DHS explained what Johan did to become a threat to the public? And I think that there's some confusion there as well, right? Originally, the original explanation is that he was trying to run over an ICE agent, but that has been retracted, correct?
Yeah, and I'll say the way we learned all of this has still been sort of one or two steps removed actually from ICE. So a lot of this information that we learned on the day of the shooting and then in the immediate aftermath was through Senator Angus King, who said he had spoken with Mark Wayne Mullen, who's the DHS secretary. The first sort of line was that he was fleeing or tried to run over an ICE agent. And then that changed to actually this was not the person they were, or the statement that we got from ICE was sort of wound around in a couple different circles where they never actually named Duran Guerrero as the person they were looking for. They said the ICE agents went to a house that was the last known residence of someone they were looking for. Someone exited the house and they drove the vehicle in a direction of the officer. And that's when the shooting happened. So they still haven't actually named, as far as I understand, Duran Guerrero in ICE hasn't in the statements that they've released.
All right. And then his last question, could the Maine Attorney General even press charges, or would a federal agent be out of reach? Do we know the answer to that?
Well, I don't know the answer to that directly for this case. We'll see. But I will say in Minnesota, which obviously also saw a big surge in ICE activity over the winter, the state level prosecutors there are charging an ICE agent with the shooting. It was not a fatal shooting, but they're charging an ICE agent with a second degree assault and falsely reporting a crime. And that agent was actually arrested in Texas. And as I understand it, is still in custody in Texas. And prosecutors in Minnesota are seeking to extradite that agent to Minnesota to face charges there.
All right. We'll go to Mary calling from Belfast. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that when towns like Biddeford and other towns all over this country are feeling outrage and shock over what has been happening to them, they should not be accused of trying to divide their community. Grief is a major part of it. But all of those reactions, grief, outrage, shock, should be honored. And that is what I wanted to say.
All right, Mary. Thank you for your call. We're going to move on to Grayson Luckner, who's a state representative calling in from Portland. Hi, Grayson. Go ahead.
Hey, Jennifer and everybody. I just wanted to add the thing that I thought was missing from this conversation is that the data privacy law that the legislature failed to pass could help rein in some of the abuses of companies like Palantir, which has been documented extensively. They're collating massive amounts of third-party commercially available data to target immigrants on a widespread scale. So that's one measure that the legislature really needs to enact for a myriad of reasons, but this is definitely chief among them.
Grayson, thank you for calling in. Let's see if I can squeeze in another call. I'll go to Bob in Bangor. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I haven't heard the whole program, but my point is that the shooter should only be one of the people investigated. Any HR person I've talked with in the last weeks says that they would have picked up the problems with this candidate. And just a minimum of investigative work would have revealed some of the obvious background problems. So to me, there's a gross negligence of responsibility in this case, and those people should not get off. They should also be looked at.
Bob, thank you. And do we know the scope of the investigation, Ari? Is it just on what happened on July 23rd, or is the investigation also include how was this ICE agent hired?
We don't know yet. I mean, the state attorney general has been fairly tight-lipped so far, saying that they're going to share more information when it's appropriate. Given all the scrutiny on the background of the ICE agent who's been named as the man who shot Duran Guerrero, I think the questions around vetting I would imagine, are front and center for investigators. But of course, we're waiting for confirmation on that.
Well, I thank you, Ari, for spending the hour with us. Ari Snyder, one of our All Things Considered hosts, and also a reporter who covers immigration issues. And thank you for all your reporting so far. We look forward to what you bring us in the future. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about blood donation. There is a current severe blood shortage, a crisis, according to the American Red Cross. We'll look at the donation process, how doctors use blood, and what this means for hospitals. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.